this episode of the Software Quality Podcast. My name is Randy Rice, and in this episode, we'll have a focus on agile testing and an interview with our guest Elizabeth Hendrickson of Quality Tree Consulting. But before I get to those things, I want to talk about some software quality events in the news. There was an August 26 failure of the flight plan system, which caused quite a delay in air traffic. And this was due apparently to some kind of corrupt file, and it rendered the system useless for about 90 minutes. There was a high traffic period, and actually it was not an isolated incident. In a different story than what the FAA's chief administrator had originally told the media. In fact, according to eWeek, the investigations reveal that the 20-year-old mainframe-based system had crashed several times in the last 9 years, and that the FAA has been planning its replacement for at least 4 years, but now this new next-generation IT system won't be online until at least the end of 2008. Now, my commentary here is you know how projects go, and we'll see if that happens or not. So, meanwhile, the old system kind of goes on baling wire and bubblegum, it looks like. So the major portion of this decades-old National Air Control System used to manage thousands of commercial and general aviation takeoff and landings every day has canceled quite a few times. It's a 24/7 system. And so obviously a lot of impact from this kind of failure. And as a frequent flyer, it's kind of disturbing. Actually, the best case scenario is would be the delay scenario. The worst case situation could even be safety critical. But anyway, so the manual recovery on this for part of the afternoon on August 26, this is 2008, pilots at about 40 U.S. airports were forced to manually type their flight plan information into the system, causing long delays and takeoffs, with Chicago O'Hare being one of the two or three busiest airports, and then even Midway close by being affected. And Hank Kraskowski, chief operating officer for the FAA's air traffic organization, said, "We've never seen it fail in this manner." So anyway, some news that you might be interested in at Rice Consulting. We're just recently launching our new service-oriented architecture testing class, which is in the online format now. We've been teaching it in live form for a couple of years now. So if you want to learn about testing SOA and you want a complete picture of that from the functional and the structural perspective, then I encourage you to check out our new SOA testing web-based course. You can find it on our website, riceconsulting.com. And also, we're launching a new shopping cart that you can also find it at mysoftwaretesting.com. So that's very cool. This new shopping cart is totally PCI compliant, totally secure, and a lot easier, I believe, to register for our public and online courses. Speaking of public courses, we have one coming up in late October in Dallas on Becoming a Better Tester, which will also cover in a special two-day program, Agile and Exploratory Testing. So you don't want to miss that if you're anywhere in the South Central area. The pricing on that is extremely value-added at $697 per person for a two-day program. It's hard to even find a one-day program for that anymore. If you bring three or more people, you get a 10% discount. And then in Oklahoma City, November 4th and 5th, I know it's the day of the election on the 4th, so it's going to be crazy that day. But hey, we're going to be doing this class on innovative software testing techniques, same price, downtown Oklahoma City at Devon Energy. So if you're in the South Central part of the U.S., you'll make it worth your while to try to get to that one. So, now let's talk a little bit about Agile. That's going to be the theme of this podcast. And first of all, before I get to the interview with Elizabeth, I hear this question all the time: what does it really mean to be agile? And that's actually the topic of the feature article in my most recent newsletter that you can find at riceconsulting.com. But it's a question I hear all the time, and I find it that I hear it a lot from people who are really just tired of dealing with project bureaucracy. And of course, I can understand that. That's I think it's a good thing to be asking that question about what is agility and what does it mean for projects, what does it mean for development and testing. So the thing about it is you can read a lot of books and go to the conferences and learn what it means to be agile, and you'll see all these stories about how people were successful in doing that. And so then you go back to your own company and you try to do these things, and you either get frustrated or even fail outright. You'd like to try some of these approaches, but even sometimes you don't even know where to start because you think about the people in your own organization and you can't even imagine it. You can't even imagine a developer sitting next to a tester or not producing this big, thick set of user requirements. And then another thing is you look at all the different varieties of agile methods and you wonder which one is best for you. So here's the dirty little secret I tell my clients here. The magic is not in the method, but it's how you apply it. And I know that's just common sense, but it's also very much the reality. The implication is that there are many of the varieties of software development methods, agile or not, that could work for you if you're smart about how you apply them. But here's another little secret, too, is that you can adopt agile practices and still be slow in delivering projects. I know it sounds crazy, but it is really true. You can also experience project failure using agile. So to me, being agile means being flexible and responsive. It means delivering business value in ways that make sense. And only you really know how to do that in your own organization because you know the cultural issues. Now, you may not know how to solve them, but the answer to that is probably not in a course or a book, but it may very well be in learning how to work better together. It could also be focusing on the 20% of the tasks that add value and dropping the other things. And so to do this, typically you'll have to make sacrifices, and some people are going to be offended, and some people are not going to want to make those sacrifices, but you know, that's the price of change. Now, there's also some big implications in doing all of this. For example, what if you've spent years getting up to CMM level 3 or higher, or establishing really detailed processes? Do you scrap all that work? Well, once again, you have to approach that question with some thoughtfulness as well. I believe you still need processes, and I believe they're still helpful even in Agile. They give you some really important guidance where specific rules may be needed. However, I'm talking about just enough process, not the big 3-inch binders that gather dust on your bookshelves. Now, I have a couple of blog posts that you can find at my blog, randallrice.blogspot.com, that relate to this topic, a couple of presentations that I've heard recently that I thought were very good. And one of the presentations had a very interesting statistic in there about the large number of requirements typically that are implemented in software but never used. You know, it was like over 50% or so. And when you think about that, how much time we spend implementing requirements that are never used, and then right after that, maybe in the 20s, it seems like I remember percentages of features that are seldomly used. So just think about all the stuff that we do to get either never used or seldomly used features into software. And you can see why it may be a good thing to take another look at how we do software development. Now, here's the good news, though. Even if you're not very agile right now, if you're smart about it, if you're thoughtful about how you build, test, and deliver software, then you can be set up to be more agile as time goes on. And really, you know, when you remember that change is sometimes a function of time, it kind of takes a period of time, it could even be months or years sometimes before people get the idea, then, you know, slow change can also be effective. You can take your agility and maybe smaller steps as well. So, anyway, those are some of my thoughts on becoming more agile. Now let's hear what Elizabeth has to say about it.
Well, I'm speaking with Elizabeth Hendrickson of Quality Tree Consulting, a longtime friend. Really had a great session yesterday that I heard, so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And we're going to talk about some of the big fears of going to Agile. And so I just want to ask you a few questions about things that I commonly hear a lot. And the first one that comes to mind is, how do we handle requirements? Because we're used to having the big requirements up front, the brush, or we're used to you know, doing IEEE 830 view of requirements. How would you alleviate someone's fears or at least put them to ease a little bit about requirements in Agile?
What we've been doing as an industry for the last many, many, many years is trying to figure out how to get better and better and better at getting perfect requirements. And what we're finally figuring out is that we're never going to get there.
It's not possible.
And the more we try to do the big requirements up front, the more we end up in this horrible situation where we think we finished the requirements, and then 2 years later when we're finishing up the program as a whole, we discover that we missed things, there were ambiguities, misunderstandings, assumptions, implicit requirements, and we're waiting 2 whole years to find that out. So on an Agile project, the biggest difference, I think, is really the batch size. We can think of it in terms of batch size. Instead of trying to do big requirements up front, we're doing them in small chunks because we're working in iterations. And so we're going to have placeholders for the things that are on the backlog that we want to work on next. And those placeholders are, in extreme programming, referred to as story cards, or they're backlog items in Scrum. And they're just a sentence or two about the capabilities that we're going to build next. But that's not where it stops. And this is one of the misconceptions about Agile, that all we're doing is working from requirements on 3x5 cards, and how could that possibly work?
Mm-hmm.
That's just a placeholder for a conversation.
Okay.
And then we have the conversation as we are elaborating what we're going to be doing in that iteration,
mm-hmm.
or that sprint, we capture the expectations that our business stakeholders express. We capture those as conditions of satisfaction or as acceptance tests, acceptance criteria,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we move forward with in the iteration itself. And so this allows us to really steer the ship so that in the next iteration, if we discover in iteration number one that we had a bunch of implicit assumptions about what would or would not be part of that scope, mm-hmm. then we have the opportunity to add that to the backlog for iteration two and address it in a month instead of having the problem, how do we address it in 2 years?
I see. Well, that's really cool. And, you know, it reminds me of something you were speaking about yesterday about the acceptance-driven test design, the ATDD.
Yeah.
Now, not to be confused with ADD, which is me.
Yeah,
me too. The ATDD. you know, I hadn't heard that before, but I thought, wow, that's really great because really... a lot of development goes that way anyway, where we work from acceptance criteria on forward, but I'd never heard that before, so I thought it was a really great concept. One of the concerns that I hear from a lot of people is that their users either expect documentation or they need documentation for other reasons.
Right.
And so going into the Agile world and for our documentation isn't, you know, isn't the goal. Working software is.
Right.
What would you say to people to alleviate some of the concerns about that?
Well, again, one of the misconceptions of Agile is that you don't document, but you actually do document. Instead of documenting based on templates that require you to write 73,000 pages to capture what could otherwise be captured on one page, you just capture the one-page version. Now, that said, there are also some lightweight techniques that teams use. For example, instead of doing a very heavyweight, very detailed technical specification where we theorize about what the technical architecture might maybe be,
mm-hmm.
in this like 200-page document with 73,000 class diagrams, instead we sketch on a whiteboard and then we take a photo, a digital photo of that, and we upload the digital photo to the wiki. And so what otherwise might have taken 3 weeks worth of documentation effort is now taking approximately 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's just little things like that really add up. It's just someone going off, drawing a Visio diagram, spending all afternoon doing it and all that.
Right.
That's awesome. And so then the third one is, you know, things move so quickly in Agile.
Yes.
Iterations, a lot of things going on at the same time. When someone has been used to the traditional command and control view of the world, and I hear this more from managers than anyone else, how do I keep control in the Agile space, okay? They're very concerned about this, and they get really bothered. What would you say on that?
Most of the time when someone tells me that they want control, what they really mean is they want visibility. They don't feel like they have any idea what's going on, and therefore they lose trust, and then it becomes an issue of trust, and then they feel like they need to be in control in order to be sure that things are going to come out okay. The Agile answer to that is to give full visibility into what's going on, which is why we use big visible charts. It's why we make sure that we've got, continuous integration is an example of this. The continuous integration tools show us red for broken build, green for for good builds, and we make sure that the monitors are visible to everyone, including the executives, including the managers, so that the managers have full visibility and therefore can help the project make sure that the project is meeting the goals of the business, but without having to do it from a command and control standpoint, they get the full information and give the team the goals and allow the team to self-organize to figure out how we're best going to achieve those goals.
And that's really great, and what I just thought of that's interesting there is that a lot of times you don't have that on traditional projects. You don't have good levels of visibility, even on a traditional life cycle.
No, in fact, traditional life cycles, pretty much, especially with the silos, guarantee that there is no real visibility into how things are going at all, which is why we have those control structures in place, because we've historically needed them.
Okay, well, cool. Well, Elizabeth, how do people contact you?
You can contact me through either of my websites. www.qualitytree.com is my corporate website, and I keep my blog at www.testofbest.com.
Cool. Well, thanks for your time today, and we'll catch up with you later.
Awesome. Okay, thank you.
Well, thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Software Quality Podcast. I encourage you to come out to the website, riseconsulting.com, keep up with what we're doing for the next presentation of the podcast. And also, if you go to talkshoe.com, I'm starting to do some open free teleconferences out there, typically about once a month. And so you'll see the schedule. You'll also see the recordings of the past teleconferences that I do. The cool thing about this whole thing is that you can listen online, you can dial in, you can ask a question, you can submit a question in a chat, a text kind of format, and I can answer them there. This is totally free. I have some that are part of my mentoring program and online training programs, which I also encourage you to check out. But I do have this one that happens about once a month where anyone can just join in and join the discussion. So once again, that's at talkshoe.com, talkshoe.com. Anyway, until next time, have a great day and keep on testing.